Welcome to River Talk Podcast, the podcast where we talk about things mostly river related. Today we're doing something a little different. We're going to do an interview of a paddler who's been up to some pretty cool stuff lately, and we'll talk about that more in a bit. But we'd like to introduce Ben McKenzie, paddler, traveler, and graphic designer. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me on. Pretty stoked.
Yeah, stoked to have you here. So our interview topic today, we're going to talk about your recent trip on the Minim River, which, based on the stories you've told us, sounds like it had a lot of interesting components to it. So,
but first, where are you now?
Right now, I am in Moab.
Nice.
Yeah. What are you doing down there?
Well, I just got here, and I was going to go check out some sweet hikes and stuff. I was just kayaking around in Idaho on the Payette for a few weeks, though, and so that was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any standout moments from up there?
Let's see. Nothing too crazy apart from, I guess, Payette is a super different type of river. Don't paddle that often. Scary.
So,
it's cool to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Was it at a higher water level?
No, it's kind of like lower, but good. But I don't know, just like big water, but also shallow. So that's always a little gnar.
Yeah.
Were you upside down at any point?
No, I was never upside down, but quite a few times where I thought, or I think you're in the deep water, and like kind of like a big wave, you just slam a rock.
Oh,
that's always a little spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No new cracks though.
No new cracks. I have one crack. I don't know if you heard about that one.
Is that the side crack?
Yeah, and then I also lost my stern pillar.
Mm.
So it's getting quite warped.
Oh no.
Not doing great.
remind me how you lost the
while you're
stern
driving,
pillar.
Right?
Well, I had it out for doing multi-days,
mm-hmm.
and somewhere along the line, it came out of my car, or I took it out, and left it behind.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not doing great.
So, regarding the crack that you have, there was somebody who wrote in asking about the McKenzie method, so I imagine that's what you did to the current crack that you have.
Yeah.
Do you want to walk through how you do the McKenzie method and how long that particular one has been holding up?
Yeah, sure. So my theory on welds is that everyone over-engineers them, and there is no need to get crazy with melting crazy amounts of plastic in or drilling bolts. And I saw people like melting mesh into a kayak recently that was cracked.
Oh, dang.
So I think that's pretty silly. Yeah. My idea is that if you're melting the kayak, you're only making it weaker. So the McKenzie method only involves Gorilla Tape, and a heat gun works best. And what you do is you melt individual strips of Gorilla Tape over the crack, but you want to weave it. Kind of want to cross it as you go, kind of checkerboard style. So as you're heating it up, just heat it up, and you smush it in. You want to get it nice and gooey.
How does one smush?
It's a practice roll with the thumb.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you wear gloves or have any opinion on wearing gloves when you're doing that?
I've tried using like a shirt, and it always sticks, so I just go bare skin.
Nice.
And it's a little hot sometimes, but it works best.
Nice.
Okay.
And and so I did that, when would that have been, probably like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it on quite a few missions with dragging over rocks and long portages on multi-days, and it is holding strong, and I've not had to redo anything. So
awesome.
Feeling good. Yeah.
Very nice. And do you drill out the ends of the crack?
Yeah, drill out the ends.
What somebody was asking how you do that in the field. How have you done that if you're not like, well, if you're on a multi-day or something, you're trying to do that at camp?
Oh, yeah. I just heat up a screwdriver with just a lighter or Heacon if you have it. But if you're on a multi-day, lighter, and that works fine.
Nice.
Just poke it through. It takes like a few goes of heating it up, but it doesn't take that long.
Okay, right on.
And I'm remembering we have had troubles with just regular lighters. Have you been using a butane lighter, or are you able to do all that with just a regular lighter?
It's more of like a, I've done it with like a barbecue torch lighter kind of thing.
Nice.
But if you have a butane lighter, that would be best.
Yeah.
Really, any lighter would get it hot enough, though, I think.
Yeah. Or a jet boil, maybe.
Or that. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, there's that. So what are your plans for Moab? You said some cool hikes. Anything specific?
Oh, no, I wanted to check out some cool slot canyons and stuff. Mostly, I was just working on a couple of projects here.
Nice.
I haven't had much time to explore yet, but went up a cool creek yesterday through a canyon.
Oh,
and
nice.
With a couple Utah kids. Yeah.
Nice. Are they kayakers, or did you meet them some other way?
Yeah. Aiden and Jackson.
Mm.
Okay.
From Utah.
Sweet. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
How long is the drive there from the Payettes?
Let's see. You know, I came from Park City first. And I think it was about 4 or 5 hours from there.
That's not bad.
Park City also.
Wait, what is there to boat in Park City?
There is a tiny creek called Six Water.
Oh, I've done that.
You've done that?
Yeah. Nick.
No
Nick.
Way.
Yeah, Nick. Nick, who you know, Nick took a Kmart raft down that and ran everything.
Oh, sick.
Isn't there video? Don't
there's
you guys video. Have video?
Yeah, I'll send that to you at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like 30 CFS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we had 26.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, that creek was sweet.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. It's really fun, tiny, but everything goes, and it's just very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it like comes out of the hillside, too. It's like fake.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Like the entry rapid is like you sort of like slide down a dam almost into the first ledge, as I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. We did not run that though.
Ah.
That didn't look good.
Couple CFS too low.
Yeah. A couple more CFS. It would have been good, but not that good.
You guys really should have got in there with 30. That's the right flow.
Yeah. That'd be juicy. Apparently it used to run at like 400 CFS all the time.
What?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and then whoever runs the dam cut it off for some reason.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. That's what I heard.
Need some AW Utah reps to negotiate some releases.
Yeah. Yeah, someone needs to get on that. It'd be pretty stout then.
Yeah.
And then I also ran the Weber.
Haven't heard of that one.
Class 2, but with sweet splat rocks.
Cool. Oh, nice.
So if you're looking to splat, it's a good spot.
Were you able to do that in your boat, or did you borrow a boat?
I borrowed a boat. Nice. One nice. Sec. I'm about to get. I'm getting kids yelling at me.
Oh dang.
Oh, here. Can you give me one sec?
Yeah.
Is that Ben McKenzie?
Yo, I'm doing a podcast.
Can we get a picture? Can we get a picture, Ben?
All right. So.
Okay, into the topic.
Onto the topic.
Right.
So, Minim River. Where did that first enter your mind as something you wanted to do?
All right. Well, I've been looking at. One sec. I need to tell him to go away. River talk, dog.
Big.
It's huge. It's huge, and they can hear you. I gave Bongflow a shout out.
Yeah. Hey, that's my boy, man. All right. Do something.
All right, sick. Go ahead.
That's why you declined my calls.
Yeah, that was good. That's I was going to tell you that would probably happen at some point. But
I think this is great. This is what the listeners want.
Yeah, that was gold. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, back to biz.
Back to business. All right, James looking over his notes. Continue.
All right, cool. So the Upper Minum River, I've always been pretty stoked on the whole Willowa drainage, which is where the Minum is.
Where's the Willowas?
Where's the for what?
Where are the Willowas for those that have no idea what that is?
Like far northeastern Oregon near Joseph.
All right.
Yeah. So it's super cool mountain range. And I've always been super interested in running whitewater there. And Jacob brought up the Upper Minum to me. So I was scoping it out on Google Earth, and it looked really awesome. yeah, so decided to give it a go. And had a big hike in, which I was pretty stoked about also.
How big? Let's talk about the hike for a little bit. So I remember dropping you off. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. I'm looking through Jordan's questions here. Let's go over like the planning before we get there.
Okay.
What are you looking at? What do you see on the maps that makes it look good? And what do you see about the hike that looks awesome or challenging or that?
Okay. Well, I guess so. As far as the run goes, there was a lot of ledgy looking stuff. It was kind of brushy, so it's kind of hard to tell what was in there, but there was a lot of white, which looks.
And
like
this is from satellite imagery, right? That you're looking at.
Yeah, this is from satellite imagery.
So space scouting.
Space scouting, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of white in between the brush, and there was like a top 7 miles that I couldn't find anything about people running before, so that was what I was most interested in. So it looked like there was a cool 7 mile first descent to be had. So that's what piqued my interest.
Nice.
What did those reports of the section that had been run, how did that look to you before you did the run?
It looked pretty good. They actually left a lot of cool stuff out, if I remember correctly. They may have had less water than me. But from what I gathered, or maybe I didn't just read closely enough, it wasn't as good as I thought it was. Yeah.
Okay. How did they describe it?
I mean, I'd have to look back, but it seemed very mellow to me. They didn't include the long, like, nonstop class 3+ sections in there. I think they had a ducky in there too, so maybe that affected my opinion of how hard it was.
we'll let that slide.
We'll let that one go.
Okay, and then when you're looking at the hike, before you do the hike, what are you picturing that being like?
I was picturing the hike being. It was harder than I thought it would be. More uphill, which I knew it was going to be, but a little stouter. Also, I weighted my kayak down quite a bit more than necessary.
You had a lot of food, as I recall.
Yeah, a lot of food, an accidental Alfredo sauce package.
which weighed like 2.5 pounds, I'm sure.
Yeah, the first night I thought I was about to eat a sweet chicken Alfredo thing. And just dumped a bag of Alfredo sauce into my pot.
Did you eat it?
No, I dumped it out. luckily I had 5 days of food, so it was all good. Nice. But that was definitely a heavy one. But the hike was pretty hard, actually. At the top of the pass, there was probably 2 miles of snow.
Dang.
Were you able to tell where the trail was when you got to the snow, or was it buried?
It was totally buried, but there was one group of people that was ahead of me, I guess, so I followed their footsteps up, but
Nice.
Yeah. It would have been pretty easy to find the lake still, since it was a straight shot, but it definitely helped.
Good.
Follow the footsteps.
Did you make it all the way to the lake on your first day of hiking?
No, I was probably like 3/4 of a mile from the lake when I decided to stop.
Was it getting dark, or were you just...
Yeah, it was getting dark, and so I decided just to find the first, like, good spot I could that wasn't super snowy. There were some dry patches. It was kind of slow going. I kept falling on the snow, and it was really hard to get my backpack back on in, like, the middle of a snowfield.
Oh.
So that took up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I've 5 minutes of fall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I fell a lot.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What was your technique for getting it all back up and moving on the trail once you fall?
Well, there usually wasn't a tree nearby, so I would dig a little hole for the stern to go in, or the bow of my kayak, and I would get it up on the bow after a few attempts without sliding and try to get it back on. But, yeah, that took a bunch of time, though, because it happened a lot. I mean, I feel like it took at least, like, 30 or 45 minutes out of the hike.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I fell a lot.
God, that would take a lot of energy.
I almost should have just shouldered it at that point, but...
Could you have dragged it? Was there enough snow for that?
Yeah, there was a bunch of snow, but it was kind of uphill, and that would have been harder.
Okay.
It was, like, kind of lumpy snow, so...
Ugh.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been super easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And for the listener's reference of how heavy Ben's boat was, all three of us at the start of dropping him off were trying to lift it up to position Ben. And it was kind of difficult for three people to do that. And so we set him on his way just to carry it all on his own for the next 30 miles.
Yeah. And after more trips this summer, my kayak has always been much heavier than everyone else's, so I'm definitely doing something wrong.
Have you figured out what it is?
I haven't. Someone commented on a full tube of toothpaste that I brought.
Were you trying to be economic in that purchase?
What?
Were you trying to make the economic choice in that scenario?
Yeah, that's what I had.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think it added that much weight, but maybe I had a lot of other stupid items like that.
Maybe you had a secret, you still have a secret Alfredo sauce packet back there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I brought a few extra GoPro batteries on one of the trips and forgot my GoPro case, so that was a waste.
Oh, my goodness.
That's some weight.
Yep. How many other people did you see once you made it to the lake? You said there was one group of people ahead of you. Did you ever bump into them?
When I got to the top of the lake, I saw them, like, that morning, and they were hiking out. And those were the only people I saw for pretty much the whole trip until I got farther down the river.
Cool.
Yeah, there was no one else on the trail. It seemed like people hadn't been there in a long time. Like, still a bunch of wood. Down across the trail. There were some pretty old footsteps that I was following for a little bit down the trail a ways, but it seemed like it had been a while since someone else had been there. That's pretty cool.
So did that mean you were seeing more wildlife than you would normally be seeing? Was there any concern of larger animals?
Yeah, I didn't see any wildlife, but for probably 5 or 6 miles on the last part of the hike, I was following a trail of either like mountain lion poop.
Oh.
Or someone told me there was wolves there also. I don't know if it's from that, but
either of those sounds terrible.
It's big and hairy.
Oh my gosh.
For miles.
Oh.
Well, hopefully it was just you seeing him.
That was kind of spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of spooky. I was looking behind me a lot on the last bit of the hike.
I bet.
So.
All right. Yeah. So day two, you finally reached the water. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So my plan to run the top 7 miles So I wanted to put him pretty high up. And I had a pretty late start that day.
What timing does that mean?
I probably started hiking. When was that? I don't know. 8 or 9. I thought I should have started much earlier. So probably 9. Anyways, after a while of hiking, through a super cool valley, like one of the cooler places I've been, after you get down to the bottom at the end of the lake. Yeah, so I saw a spot that looked flat in the creek and decided to hike in and put in. Spent a while there again, hanging out, eating food.
How far would you guess you are below the lake at this point, miles-wise?
Let's see. 2? I probably hiked 2, maybe 3 miles.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, so, and it took a little while to get there because there was more snow, but, so I put on where the creek looked flat, looked sweet, paddled for less than a minute, and the creek dropped off the face of the earth.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like waterfall or just like cascade?
Just slides. It's like kind of manky slides, which would have been cool, but it was full of wood and there was no eddies. So, yeah, so I walked down a little bit just to scout and it looked woody. So I just started hiking through the woods and went for a while and it was just looking the same. I probably spent like an hour hiking through the woods. And then after that, I decided to hike back up to the trail, put my backpack on, and just keep hiking.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, I did not, barely covered any distance when I first put on. so, that was annoying, because I spent a bunch of time doing that. And then, I hiked for a while, I got closer to the creek, heard a cool waterfall, or what sounded like a cool waterfall, checked it out, and it was just a pretty stout double drop with wood. Tiny with no eddies. So that's kind of when I said screw it and just decided to hike down to where I knew the other group had put on. So in total, I hiked probably 6 miles after I decided to take off.
Was this on the trail or were you just like bushwhacking?
The trail was pretty close when I decided to go back, luckily.
Nice.
Yeah. So like in total, the hike was 11 or 12 miles, somewhere between there.
Whoa. Yeah. And this is a relatively high elevation for Oregon at the going over a pass there.
And what's that elevation?
I don't know, Jacob?
I know. He's zooming in right now.
looks like you topped out around 7,400 feet.
Yeah.
You started in the Lostien drainage and I hiked over the pass to Minim Lake, which it's probably worth noting, kind of cool fact about Minim Lake is it drains into both the Lostien River and the Minim River. I thought that was
kind of cool. And it was like beginning of July and it was still mostly frozen when I got up there. That was kind of cool.
Dang. Yeah. So the lake was mostly frozen.
Yeah.
No camping up there.
Yeah.
And I guess that's relevant to another question that Jordan mentioned was just how do you determine water levels? And so for somewhere like the Wawas, it's when it still has snow in late June, early July.
But
that's different than paddling in Western Oregon where you're relying off of rain.
Yeah. But then we also learned that on that same trip, snowmelt runs are kind of hard to know exactly how much water is going to be coming down because when you guys all ran the Lostien, it seemed like it was a pretty high water level where that wasn't something that we necessarily expected.
Yeah. Tilly, there was actually a fair amount of water in the Minim, more than I was expecting, I'd say. I don't know if I'd want to do it lower. It was kind of rocky, kind of like a lot of boulder bashing, but I was surprised by the amount of water that was in there.
And that was a good thing for your trip?
Yeah, Yeah, totally. It was flowing pretty nicely, and there were a bunch of pretty cool moves, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, sweet.
So after your second day of hiking, did you camp or did you get to put in on the river?
Oh, yeah, I did not kayak that day.
Okay, two days of
pretty much hiked for 2 days, because I spent a lot of time that second day messing around in the woods, eating food.
Nice.
And, yeah, so I got to the standard put-in, I guess we'd call it, when it was pretty dark.
Mm.
And so I just camped there. So yeah, 2 days of hiking.
So what'd you eat for dinner that second night? Is this the Alfredo night, or is this a different night?
Alfredo night was the first night in the snow.
Okay.
I think this night I had a good one. It was a mountain house.
Nice.
Or something like that of the sort.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a good night.
Pretty good, I imagine.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so day three now. You wake up?
Yeah, wake up. Wake up, eat food, all that good stuff. I put on probably at like 8 or 9, and probably like a short section of flat water, and then it just started with really cool, like windy class 3, and that didn't really stop for 10 miles.
Whoa.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no portages. Like no wood or anything.
I think in total the run was like about 35 miles and 2 or 3 portages.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, really cool. The river was super windy and there were a bunch of log jams piled up on the outer parts of curves.
Mm.
And so there were a ton of log jams, just not in the water, which is pretty cool.
Pretty sweet.
The white water was really good. Like nonstop, good boulder garden stuff mixed in with some class 4, like more bedrocky things. Went really fast also. I mean, I could have done the entire run in one day.
Dang.
Wow. Yeah. I would recommend it to anyone really that likes hiking into runs. Worth a repeat.
Yeah, was it blind, or could you kind of see things coming up, and were there eddies?
You could see almost everything. I think I scouted 2 or 3 times. One of the rapids was not much that I scouted, and then there was one pretty solid 4+ gorge that I also looked at.
Nice.
And that rapid was... Say what?
Oh, I was going to say, were there eddies where you needed them to be, or were they kind of, you had to kind of make it happen to stop?
Eddies were actually kind of hard to catch since it was like pretty windy and just rocky the whole way. It was actually kind of hard to stop sometimes. There were a few times where I believe I just kind of went downstream through a rapid that I could boat scout, but I may have preferred to stop if I could have. So that was kind of a challenge, actually.
Okay.
But,
so yeah. this gorge that you checked out?
Yeah. So that was probably, I don't know, maybe like a 1/4 mile long in total. And that was a series of ledges and chutes with some potentially stout holes if you were to go in them. I was definitely feeling a little more focused on that one, for sure. actually got a little pinned trying to eddy out above the biggest one.
Oh, no.
That was a moment of sketchiness, for sure.
How did you unpin yourself?
Well, what happened, I tried to cut it a little too close catching an eddy and ended up just kind of paddling to some bouldery stuff at the lip and got stuck and kind of, like... pinned upstream a bit, and I ended up just getting out in the water, and water just filled up my boat.
Oh.
And it was kind of close. I had to kind of pull it in out of the current.
Dang.
So that was a moment of slight not coolness, but it fixed itself pretty fast.
What if you were doing that same thing next time, what would you do different?
I would probably, I was trying to play it a little too close. You could definitely have gotten out higher than I did. So I would say trust your instincts of what looks safest if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's hard in those scenarios when you've been hiking for so long and like putting so much physical effort, sometimes yeah. you're tempted to just like push it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's always hard to make that call when you're like kind of exhausted and whatnot.
Yeah, totally. And also I was feeling the need to kind of just keep going and keep my speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Not spend a long time just messing around if I didn't need to. I think that played a factor also.
Yeah.
Yeah, lesson learned.
Okay. And so that brings up another thing, some, you know, the topic of paddling on your own is a thing sometimes. What special, or not special, but what do you do different when you're on a trip on your own versus in a group?
I definitely scout more. More cautious in what I decide to run and not run. I think I view rapids a little differently when I'm by myself. Sometimes I think a rapid will look worse than it might be if I'm by myself, because, you know, a hazard where someone could just pull you out easy mm-hmm. wouldn't be the case otherwise. Yeah, definitely more focused, a little more in tune and paying attention, I think.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good answer. So after this gorge, you did get out and scouted it, drain your boat, and then yep. you run that gorge. Everything goes well through there?
Yeah, that was all good. Super fun. Yeah, really fun rapid, flowy. And then after that, it was just more super cool class 3-4 until you get to the sweet fishing lodge, pretty much. Huh. It's just out there in the middle of nowhere, which is pretty cool.
There's a fishing lodge? Did you go into it?
It's a fly-in fishing lodge, right?
I did not go into it. I thought about it. It looked awesome.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, you can actually hike into it. There are some people hiking in, but it's pretty sweet looking. Awesome mansion looking thing.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. And then from there, there was probably, I just measured it, I think it was like a 20-mile paddle out from there with some more class 3. And then probably the last 10 miles was just a spread out class 2 rapid.
Hmm. Pretty continuous, though.
Yeah, continuous. Like, very few paddle strokes needed if you didn't want to take a paddle stroke.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you camped
through flat water.
Nice. Yeah. And you camped again in there somewhere, right?
Yeah, I decided to camp again that night just because I didn't want to do it all in one day. I thought it'd be cool to do it in two.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just camped somewhere. I think I was like 6 miles from the takeout when I camped. But
okay.
Yeah, but, if you could do it all in one day.
Okay. Did you camp on an island or on shore? Did you, like, pick out a campsite or just kind of camped when you felt like camping?
I just camped where I camped, like, I felt like it. I passed by some better campsites, for sure, because I was looking for a sweet one. And I ended up just getting kind of a bouldery, rocky one that night. Yeah, and there was actually a thunderstorm that night, which I was not prepared for.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did you have for camping?
I had a hammock and a sleeping bag.
With no cover?
Pad. And so I just put my sleeping pad on top of me. My hammock.
Nice.
And that did the trick.
Okay. Did you sleep the whole night, or was your sleep compromised by the rain?
Definitely compromised. For sure.
Yeah.
The raindrops were keeping me awake.
Oh, I bet.
But the sleeping pad trick worked pretty well. So
nice.
I'd recommend it if you're stuck in that situation.
Okay, noted.
Yeah. Yeah. So, big picture question. I feel like some paddlers that paddle at your ability might not see the appeal of a trip like this, but what makes you enthusiastic and excited to keep doing trips like this where there may not be super sick whitewater, but there's kind of a cool place to check out with your boat and there's a lot of unknowns?
Oh, all right. Well, I'd say almost any day I would choose a new run over a sweet class 5 run that I've done a bunch of times before. I think exploring things is what drives me to kayak in general. Mm. It's more interesting, especially when you feel like you already kind of paddle at like kind of the top of your ability and you're not necessarily getting better by kayaking harder stuff. It's more just more risk instead. There's a lot to get out of just seeing new places, and finding your way down a new run is a challenging skill in its own. I feel like there's a lot of like really good paddlers, like class 5 paddlers, that aren't necessarily super good at getting their way down an exploratory run that isn't super hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really good skill to have, just like safety wise and also just for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's really cool finding just a cool rapid. I feel like running one shitty creek is worth it if there's a cool rapid on it that you get to run for the first time. I think that's worth a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's cool to be in places that you know not a lot of places or not a lot of people have been. And I find a few of my favorite memories on trips that like we've done together is not even being in my boat. It's just like portaging my way down this really cool creek and being like, dang, like that would be such a sick rapid if there wasn't wood in it. And like, oh man, we got to keep portaging. Or just like having the hope that downstream there's going to be a sick rapid. And I feel like there's a lot of joy that you get from that, even if it's like, oh man, I wouldn't do that creek ever again. But you're just like the whole time you're just like, man, there's going to be such a sick rapid. And like, this is such a cool place to be with my friends. And it's just awesome.
Or like, guys, yeah, check totally out the size of this Devil's Club.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Look at the size of this Devil's Club. I think Ben can attest to the, well, maybe you've seen larger, but when we were scouting the creek in the North Cascades, I just remember like, that was the biggest Devil Club I've ever seen, and that was one of the highlights of that hike.
Yeah, totally. I just finished getting Devil's Club out of my hand from like that from then, like a week ago.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little something to remember your trip by.
Yep, little keepsakes.
Yeah.
It looks like Jacob has a question.
Sure. This is another question from Jordan. He asked a number of questions about how do you handle certain things on an exploratory trip? Looks like one of them is throw and goes. So if you get to a rapid and it looks like a throw and go might be the thing to do, but you don't know if anyone's ever done that or run that river before. And so certainly not, you don't know if someone's done that throw and go. What do you do? How do you assess whether that's a safe thing to do or whether, how do you weigh that against the other options?
Oh, well, if you're asking me, I'm always pretty scared to be the first one to throw and go.
Oh, right.
But I think the answer is Jacob usually goes first.
Second that.
But logically, I can tell that the pool is deep enough, I think. Especially if it's,
you could say that you look for, I know that's hard to
you would if you're scouting on anything that's shallow, the boils are not going to be coming up downstream very far, you know. Otherwise, I guess if it's a green pool, can kind of just look at the sides of the canyon, see how sheer they are, how just dark the water is. But again, I'm usually not the first one to go, so I'm not sure I feel comfortable telling people when and what not to do in that situation.
Maybe a better question for you would be, you used to really have a resistance to jumping off cliffs into water, but you seem like you got over that fear, or maybe not got over it, but have now you're able to jump off cliffs, whereas it used to take a long time. I remember one moment or one day we were all at Blue Pool on the Mackenzie River, your namesake river, and I remember you having quite an experience up there getting yourself to jump in. So maybe describe that experience and then how that's translated into being able to jump off of stuff now.
All right. Well, I guess the way to describe the way I used to feel, I would definitely freeze when I would have to jump, and I physically could not make myself do it. So I guess I've learned, I think that's the most fear I've felt, is just having to jump off cliffs. I don't know. I think the key was learning to kind of set aside the fear of that, which could go hand in hand with kayaking. Put the fear out of your mind. But honestly, I still feel the fear, and I've taught myself to push through it. And jumping off cliffs is still scary for me.
Was there any trick, or you just kind of tricked yourself, your mind? How did you get to the point where you can go from needing to be up there for 10 minutes to being able to jump at will?
I tried to shut off my mind and not hesitate. Hesitating was what was ruining me.
Okay.
The longer, just shut off your mind and go.
Okay.
I've
always found it interesting that there are some really good kayakers like yourself who have paddled off 80-foot waterfalls, but can't jump off a 30-foot really struggle with jumping off a 30-foot cliff. What's the difference in your mind of paddling off a really large waterfall versus jumping off a cliff half its size?
I think the difference is the level of commitment you have when you're running a waterfall. I think, especially when a waterfall has a lead-in, I'm the least nervous, because at that point, you're just focusing on running the lead-in, and you're just in the mindset of running water. But, I mean, I'm at Lotto, which just has a calm pool, and then the waterfall, I had the similar feeling of just standing at the edge of a cliff, but it's one of the things where you kind of, once you peel out into the current, you're pretty committed. And if you decide to freeze, then that's not a great option.
Totally.
So I think like the pushing through that part comes when you paddle out of the, whereas jumping off a cliff is kind of the only step where you jump off the cliff.
Okay.
I feel like there's
I prefer running. If a waterfall has a lead-in, I prefer that. I'd say.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's interesting you say that, because I remember, and both of you can correct me if I'm wrong, on Gladiator Creek, there's the waterfall. And I think you were the only person to run the lead in to that drop and then also run the waterfall after that.
The first time we were there.
Yeah. And then you also went first the second time with the other group, as I recall. Is that, or did Adam?
I think Adam or Chris did. Okay. Because I know I landed on my face and Chris was taking photos below.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I remember that. I remember you being like, dude, I feel weird. I don't know what's going on, but I feel super off. And I was like, I don't know. It seemed like you hit the water pretty hard on that drop. He's like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but on that first trip.
Yeah, you ran the lead in and
And Emil the lead-in seems super, like, to me, and I'm not as good as a paddler as either of you, but to me, it's so hard to even think about running a rapid above something that I'm nervous about, because I feel like I want to dedicate all my energy to what is making me concerned. But it's interesting to hear you say that running a lead-in is helpful in going off of a larger drop, because it just puts you in kind of the focus mode.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel like that waterfall in Boulder Creek kind of stout.
Yeah, definitely.
Like into the 40, 50 footer. I'm like less nervous doing that than paddling off, I don't know, like Celestial, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow. With much higher consequences on Boulder Creek.
Huh. Yeah.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's just good to get focused. So, yeah.
Yeah. That definitely makes sense. I think I'll be thinking about that if I ever run something that gets me in that zone again.
Okay, so another question here has to do with eddies and stopping. And I've heard this question before, or at least this viewpoint from people who haven't done much exploratory kayaking before. And maybe you're on like a sort of continuous river and you've got a way kind of pushing downstream versus scouting every single corner. How do you, when you're looking at a corner that you can't really see the next eddy, how are you assessing that and deciding whether to push downstream or not?
Good question. I mean, if I really cannot see downstream, then I wouldn't go. But like for the times where you can see the drop in front of you, but not necessarily what's below it, but you can see the eddy downstream somewhere. That's the situation where I would try to keep pushing, I guess. I don't know. I mean, you kind of get a feel after a while for what a drop is doing without scouting it. You get pretty good at judging what's happening. Are you talking about like how do you like read the whitewater?
I'm not 100% sure. Because it is a good question, and I didn't have a perfect answer either.
Yeah, that's a good question, because, I mean, I do feel like I've definitely taken risks I maybe shouldn't have by doing that same thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I know on our trips you're often someone that's going ahead and, like, signaling the rest of the group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I do that when I'm not very sure that I'll be able to catch an eddy. And I feel like I am pretty good at judging what a drop is doing. If I can see the bottom of it anyways, or that I'll be at least be able to make it into an eddy or a stop on rocks. That's kind of a good question. Because
you might have alluded to something. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. You might have alluded to something there. He said, or just stop on rocks. I think maybe something that people who don't do those sort of trips very often, maybe what they think is an eddy and maybe what you might consider an eddy or a place to stop might be different. Whereas maybe you think running up on a rocks, or like, I know we've certainly just grabbed tree branches against the shore, and that doesn't seem weird on exploratory trips.
Yeah, totally. Especially, I mean, if we're doing an exploratory trip, there's a good chance it's super low or it's not much water. And yeah, I mean, I have paddled onto rocks or like kind of half pinned myself many times just to stop. And like that was the plan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tried to be pretty safe about it. I mean, I really, I don't do something where I'm not very confident I can't do it. I would say, just get creative, but don't be overly optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something that I've certainly learned from paddling with you both, is I have gotten more familiar by observation and by doing in relatively tame scenarios to like grabbing on the branches or getting myself on a rock or just basically being able to stop myself from going further downstream when I want to. And then also practicing a lot, catching eddies, so that when it comes to a scenario where we're doing an exploratory trip or whatnot, I'm much more comfortable with eddy hopping and reading the water in the ways that you're saying. So I think that's good advice for folks that are wondering about exploratory kayaking, meaning that there's no beta about the run or little beta about the run, is like learning and practicing in pretty safe scenarios or tame scenarios like class 2 whitewater, class 3 whitewater, how to stop your boat just using rocks or like tree branches.
Yeah, totally. And also, I think just being able to tell where an eddy will be, even if you can't necessarily see it. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot also on exploratory runs. Like, you see a corner or a big rock and you can't like see what's there, but just from like past experiences kayaking, you know that there's going to be an eddy there that you can catch.
Yeah,
just like a lot of experience comes into play, like just drawing on all the other runs you've done to know that there's going to be an eddy there or a way to stop, you know.
Yeah, and I've probably seen you make that decision correctly 100 times or maybe more, probably more. Are there any times you can think where maybe you went one eddy too far and learned a lesson from that?
Oh, give me a sec to think. I'm sure that's happened. All right, can you cut out the pause while I think? Is that doable?
Sure. Yeah, right. we're hitting pause right now.
Okay, cool. Have you seen that happen to me? I feel like that's happened. I know that's happened.
Well, the one that's coming to mind for me is when we all ran Ladies Canyon and we're like, oh, dang, that was Ladies Canyon.
That was slightly different in that.
Wait, which is Ladies Canyon?
It was on that trip we did.
Is that the Yuba?
One of the forks of the Yuba.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't so much you missing an eddy as catching the eddy and then just deciding to run the rapid based on what you saw.
Yeah. And because we'd been doing that the whole trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a time I've, like,
just missed an eddy. And
blind. Yeah.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. I feel like we've probably all done it.
I know it's happened.
But I can't. I just can't think of one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go through all the runs. Dang.
I remember you, so this isn't exactly what I asked. I remember we were running Elkhorn Creek, which goes into the Little North Saniam. And I remember you catching an eddy, and maybe you said it was for fun or something.
Oh, yeah.
Just downstream, river went underground.
What?
Yeah, I do remember. It was like, channel. I caught the eddy on purpose just to see what was there, but it was like a shallow, gravelly eddy, and the river just, like, went underground.
I've never heard that story before. That's terrible. Yeah.
And I guess that's a better example of you caught that eddy to catch it, because that's just sort of what you do on exploratory trips. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily just bomb into every rapid if you've got an inkling that maybe I'll just catch this rapid really quick or this eddy really quick and take a peek. You just do that.
And I feel like
it's more example of you doing that.
And I feel like when you're doing runs, like the runs that we try to do more often, is even on the classic runs, some of the joy we get out of it is practicing catching weird eddies.
So yeah.
We'll do a run that we've done a ton of times and know all about, and we'll be like, oh, look at that. That might be a sweet eddy to catch. And we're just always practicing that kind of stuff because we're trying to apply that to the next trip where you might have to catch a super weird eddy, like
fun.
On North Fork Silver. Like, one eddy before it drops off into a waterfall and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, which that brings up another question. Because I recall on that exact eddy you're talking about, I remember a couple of people not quite getting that eddy and having to jump out into the eddy and like.
He's talking about me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the other person, like a couple of people.
He's trying to be nice. It's okay. It was me.
Just jumping out there and pulling you into the eddy so that you didn't go backwards over the waterfall that we all ended up portaging.
Yeah.
So that is one of Jordan's questions. Grabbing others. And I can't think of anyone I've met who has grabbed more people out of a river than you, Ben. So
than me?
Yeah. how mate, it sounds like this is a new revelation for you, but you tend to be in the right place at the right time to help people. What are some of the things you think about when you're like running one of these rivers? How do you position yourself? What are you thinking in terms of other people and when they might need help?
Okay. I think I'm always on the lookout for something to happen in the first place. And it's always on my mind of positioning myself in case something went wrong. That's just something that I've just kind of developed a habit of, I think.
Yeah.
And just always looking for like outs on the water if you needed to stop.
Mm.
You know, I think like whenever I see someone get pinned or start to, I kind of look where to get out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super smart because
I think that's just a
habit.
I don't
really think about that, but it's like if someone's getting pinned, you might not get their boat out. So that's super smart to be like, are there any exits?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I've just developed the habit of looking for like emergency exits, I guess I'd call them. I mean, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you can't help someone. So that would suck.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Something. All right, let me ask you guys. There was a time on the Payette recently where this dude got pinned in front of me and I hopped out.
Oh,
but
nice.
I didn't spend time getting my throw rope because he was right there.
Hmm. And I feel like that's a scenario. So we re-recorded another podcast earlier today, and we were talking about this exact thing. It's important to know when to just act and when to, like, gather all the tools, I guess. So, like, if you're able to get to the person and it's a scenario like a pin where if you don't get to them quickly, it can be super bad. I feel like the right decision is to get to them and, like, do something about it.
Yeah, so I think more than once I've not grabbed my throw rope to get someone out. And then after the fact, I was wondering if that would have made things easier. Or I should have done that. So, I don't know. I was wondering what you guys thought about that. But
I feel like, it's hard because I've been in a scenario where, so like I'm thinking like, how would you improve that scenario? I think all of us carry our throw bag like in our kayak. We don't have a PFD throw bag. And I've certainly seen the downfalls of having a PFD throw bag. So, and then also I know it's harder to roll and like do other things if you have another thing on your torso when you're paddling.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like, I think it's a great habit to try to always like bring your throw bag with you whenever you're exiting your boat. But like if you see someone pinned in a way that you know that you can get to them and make contact and like help them, I don't know that spending the extra time to get your throw bag out of your boat would be the best decision, just considering how quickly a pin can turn bad.
Yeah, for sure.
I also think like carrying your throw bag in a way that it's easy to access is always good. Like if you can just pull it out, and I think Jacob's going to talk about this a little bit. If you can just pull it out without rustling through the back of your boat, which I've started thinking about recently, all the better.
Yeah, I definitely always keep mine between my legs. That's for sure.
Used to keep mine in the back of the boat, and I switched in the last few years, and now I always keep it in the between my legs.
Yeah, I always make sure mine is like clipped in between my legs and not moving around.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely seen people have to get to a throw rope before in the back of a boat, and it can take them like 30 seconds if it's caught on something.
Yeah, or more. It's just like, and it's so stressful.
Yeah.
When I was learning to kayak, somebody told me a throw rope is to a kayaker as a sword was to a knight. And that's definitely like making it too grandiose. But at the same time, I think the message is clear. Like, that is your one and only tool when it comes to helping other people.
Oh, and one thing that I see all the time that really bothers me. Is when people scout rapids, like not bringing a throw rope with them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, either someone is going to decide the rapid or to run the rapid and want safety and you're not going to have a bag, or someone runs it from like another group and you can't help them if they need it, or someone just slips in. Which totally happens.
Yeah,
it has happened.
That same guy who told me about the sword and the knight said the same thing. Like, you never know who's going to be coming down from upstream.
Yeah,
you have no control over that. So just bring your throw rope every time. And there is an exception to that rule in certain circumstances, but it should be the exception. You should plan on having your throw rope with you all the time.
Yeah, it's just so easy if you're like right next to the rapid.
I
think that's something that should be better taught and like passed down to newer paddlers, because it seems like it's not. And even with paddlers our age, it seems like sometimes that doesn't happen. Like like on the Chelan is the perfect example of like highly capable paddlers and lots of them in a canyon, and I just remember being like one of the few people that had a throw rope immediately at, you know, basically every rapid, because I was portaging almost all of them. But it's like, why is there only a couple people with a throw bag? Like, shouldn't everyone have a throw bag? Especially if there's like, you know, 15 people on the side of the river watching people run this for half an hour.
Yeah, it's like you're totally useless.
Otherwise, it's
very annoying.
I've definitely tried to, like, there have been times I've gotten out of my boat, taken 10 steps, and then realized I didn't grab my throw rope. And there have been a couple of times where I didn't go back for it, and I'm like, oh, I won't need it this time, and I can't stop thinking about it. It's like the only thing I'm thinking about is, you're so stupid. Why didn't you just go back when you were 10 steps from your boat to get your throw rope? Now you're 50 steps from the boat, and you're useless.
I mean, like, obviously I've forgotten to do it before, but yeah, same thing. Like, you're just like hoping nothing happens, because that'd be so terrible.
Oh, yeah.
If like something did and it was just because you decided not to grab it kind of thing.
Yeah,
definitely. Suck.
Yeah.
You're rolling the dice with somebody else's well-being every time you don't have a throw bag.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we're at over the hour mark, which means we've succeeded. And it's time to conclude with either, we decided earlier today that Gear of the Week doesn't have to be gear. It could be a recommended reading or podcast or audiobook, or it's just the thing of the week. So, Ben, do you have a thing of the week?
A thing of the week. Okay. Can we pause for a sec while I think?
Yep. Pause.
Okay. A thing of the week. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Any item.
Anything that you think people that listen to this podcast would be interested in.
Yeah. First tier is like something kayak related, obviously. Something you might bring in your boat that not everybody would think of. But beyond that, it could be pretty much anything.
Okay. Anything is something good.
Priscilla can go first while you're thinking.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Oh, all right. Shoot. So my spending a lot of time driving and whatnot, podcasts become more interesting than just listening to music. And one of my favorite podcasts to listen to has been My Favorite Murder, which is these two ladies having pretty humorous dialogue, but then also talking about crimes, murders, missing persons, hauntings, and it's all very serious topics, but they do it in a humorous way, and I feel like I learn a lot when I'm listening to them, and they are usually like drinking when they're recording the podcast, so it's a little bit loose and funny, and I feel like it just makes the drives a little more interesting.
Sweet. I've totally seen that on the list, but I haven't clicked on it.
Oh, dang.
So I'll check it out.
It's pretty good.
All
right. Are you sad or do you need some more time?
Can I do a rant?
Yes. Yeah. Do it.
Okay. I'm going to rant. Okay. Something I think is so silly is when someone posts a video of themselves doing something cool on Instagram, and then some pro sees it and shares it on their Instagram, they'll take a screenshot and reshare the pro sharing their photo.
Oh, dude. What?
And then like 10 pros will do it, and it'll be like 10 stories in a row of pros sharing their photo.
I have not. I'm clearly not cool enough because I've never seen that. But that sounds so terrible. Often.
Well, here's what you got to do now. Since I've never seen this before, you've got to take a screenshot of the screenshot that the pro took to send to me so that I can understand what's happening.
Yes. Okay, that's good.
It's like story inception.
I just can't think of any rationale behind it other than look at this pro that thinks I'm sick right now.
You are exactly right.
It gets me every time I see it.
Stop doing this, people.
Yeah.
Good one. That was a good one. That was a great one.
My thing of the week, something my dad told me that I think probably relates to a lot of kayakers, is we spend a lot of time in the car driving. And as you get older, your body starts falling apart. And so he told me that if you drive, like a lot of people drive with their knees higher than their hips, and a car kind of sets you up to do that. And he said, if you can set your seat up so that your hips are higher than your knees, that's ideal. Given that I'm fairly tall, if I set anything under my butt, my head will hit the ceiling. So what I do is I just scoot the seat all the way back so that my knees are even with my hips. And I have found that that makes driving a whole lot more comfortable. So maybe if you're driving hours and hours to go kayaking, you might maybe give that a try and see if it helps.
Yeah, no way. Good tip.
Yeah. Good one. Try.
Nice.
All right. Well, sweet guys. This was a pretty fun interview to do. Hopefully you didn't say anything too offensive. But if we did,
the duck ears.
If we did, that's why we podcast.
I apologize for the duck ears.
Ben has IK'd before.
I've IK'd and found it fun.
Yeah.
Oh.
We got video view doing the Ohanapkosh and BZ Falls.
Oh yeah, you crushed it.
In BZ Falls.
Oh yeah.
BZ Falls.
I don't remember running BZ in an IK.
Oh, you ran it in Jacob's stiletto and you crushed it. And it's in his tutorial video about why the stiletto is the superior IK.
Really? I should watch this video so I can remember running it.
Jacob will send it to you.
That's crazy. Yeah. I want to see me doing this. Sweet.
Sick.
Well, do you want to wrap it up, Ben?
Well, first off, how do people find you on Instagram? If they want to buy your stickers?
Oh, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your business.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wrap it up that way.
Okay. Sweet. I am I'll call it a freelance illustrator. And I make a lot of art and I design a lot of stickers that are outdoorsy and such for different sports. Mm-hmm. You can find it on my Instagram at benmckenzie.art. So
nice.
Go check that out if you feel like it.
And Redbubble, right? Are you still on Redbubble?
Oh, I have not put anything up there in a long time.
Oh, okay. There are some cool designs up there, and you can order various things that way. And if you're a business and you need a logo, reach out to Ben.
You've done some of that, yeah.
My Etsy is Ben McKenzie Art.
Nice. So
that's where most of my business is done.
All right. Well, you want to send it out? Send us out?
Oh, yeah. Ben, you want to make a conclusion?
A conclusion. All right. Well, let's see. I think my conclusion to any kayaker listening would be to explore more creeks, because I think that is something not enough kayakers do, and it is, I think, the best part of kayaking to see new things on the river.
Awesome.
Heck yes.
Fully agree. Yeah.
Well, it was great to talk with you a little bit, Ben. Thanks for sharing your stories and your perspective. We'll certainly ask you on again to talk about some more of your adventures. So, listeners, stay tuned.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet.
Miss any goods?
No, can't miss any goods. All right. Avoid any legal snags by telling people they're being recorded. Ben, you're being recorded.
Oh, God.
Jacob is pulling up a map so that he can ask his questions.
Oh, you have to set the introduction?
Yeah.
I was just reviewing that map also a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
You gonna do your introduction?
Oh, right. All right. All right. We'll just start. I'll do my introduction. Welcome to River Talk Podcast, the podcast where we talk about things mostly river related. Today, we're doing something a little different. We're going to do an interview of a paddler who's been up to some pretty cool stuff lately, and we'll talk about that more in a bit. But we'd like to introduce Ben McKenzie, paddler, traveler, and graphic designer. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me on. Pretty stoked.
Yeah, stoked to have you here. So our interview topic today, we're going to talk about your recent trip on the Minim River, which, based on the stories you've told us, sounds like it had a lot of interesting components to it. So,
but first, where are you now?
Right now, I am in Moab.
Nice.
Yep. But what are you doing down there?
Well, I just got here, and I was going to go check out some sweet hikes and stuff. I was just kayaking around in Idaho on the Payette for a few weeks, though, and so that was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any standout moments from up there?
Let's see. Nothing too crazy apart from, I guess, Payette is a super different type of river. Don't paddle that often. Scary.
So,
it's cool to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Was it at a higher water level?
No, it's kind of like lower, but good. But I don't know, just like big water, but also shallow. So that's always a little gnar.
Were you upside down at any point?
No, I was never upside down, but quite a few times where I thought, or I think you're in the deep water. And like kind of like a big wave, you just slam a rock.
Oh,
that's always a little spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No new cracks though.
No new cracks. I have one crack. I don't know if you heard about that one.
Is that the side crack?
Yeah, and then I also lost my stern pillar.
Mm.
So it's getting quite warped.
Oh no.
Not doing great.
Remind me how you lost the stern pillar.
Well, I had it out for doing multi-days,
mm-hmm.
and somewhere along the line, it came out of my car, or I took it out, and left it behind.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not doing great.
So, regarding the crack that you have, there was somebody who wrote in asking about the McKenzie method, so I imagine that's what you did to the current crack that you have.
Yeah.
Do you want to walk through how you do the McKenzie method and how long that particular one has been holding up?
Yeah, sure. So my theory on whales is that everyone over-engineers them, and there is no need to get crazy with melting crazy amounts of plastic in or drilling bolts. And I saw people like melting mesh into a kayak recently that was cracked.
Oh, dang.
So I think that's pretty silly. Yeah. My idea is that if you're melting the kayak, you're only making it weaker. So the Mackenzie method only involves Gorilla Tape, and a heat gun works best. And what you do is you melt individual strips of Gorilla Tape over the crack, but you want to weave it. Kind of want to cross it as you go, kind of checkerboard style. So as you're heating it up, just heat it up, and you smush it in. You want to get it nice and gooey.
How do you smush? How does one smush?
It's a practice roll with the thumb.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you wear gloves or have any opinion on wearing gloves when you're doing that?
I've tried using like a shirt, and it always sticks, so I just go bare skin.
Nice.
And it's a little hot sometimes, but it works best.
Nice.
Okay.
And, oh, and so I did that, when would that have been? Probably like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it on quite a few missions with dragging over rocks and long portages on multi-days, and it is holding strong, and I've not had to redo anything. So,
awesome.
Feeling good. Yeah.
Very nice. And do you drill out the ends of the crack?
Yeah, drill out the ends.
What, somebody was asking how you do that in the field. How have you done that if you're not like, if you're on a multi-day or something, you're trying to do that at camp?
Oh, yeah. I just heat up a screwdriver with just a lighter or heat gun if you have it. But if you're on a multi-day, lighter, and that works fine.
Nice.
Just poke it through. And it takes like a few goes of heating it up, but it doesn't take that long.
Okay, right on.
And I'm remembering we have had troubles with just regular lighters. Have you been using a butane lighter, or are you able to do all that with just a regular lighter?
It's more of like I've done it with like a barbecue torch lighter kind of thing.
Nice.
But if you have a butane lighter, that would be best.
Yeah.
Really, any lighter would get it hot enough, though, I think.
Yeah. Or a jet boil, maybe.
Or that. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Nice.
Well, there's that. So what are your plans for Moab? You said some cool hikes. Anything specific?
Oh, no, I wanted to check out some cool slot canyons and stuff. Mostly, I was just working on a couple of projects here.
Nice.
I haven't had much time to explore yet, but went up a cool creek yesterday through a canyon.
Oh,
and
nice.
With a couple Utah kids. Yeah.
Nice. Are they kayakers, or did you meet them some other way?
Yeah. Aiden and Jackson.
Mm.
Okay.
From Utah.
Sweet. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
How long is the drive there from the Payettes?
Let's see. You know, I came from Park City first. And I think it was about 4 or 5 hours from there.
Oh, that's not bad.
Park City also.
Wait, what is there to boat in Park City?
There is a tiny creek called Six Water.
Oh, I've done that.
You've done that?
Yeah. Nick.
No
Nick.
Way.
Yeah, Nick. Nick, who you know. Nick took a Kmart raft down that and ran everything.
Oh, sick.
Isn't there video? Don't you guys have video?
Yeah, I'll send that to you at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like 30 CFS.
Yeah. I think we had 26.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, that creek was sweet.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. It's really fun, tiny, but everything goes, and it's just very fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it like comes out of the hillside, too. It's like fake.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Like the entry rapid is like you sort of like slide down a dam almost into the first ledge, as I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. We did not run that though.
Ah.
That didn't look good.
Couple CFS too low.
Yeah, a couple more CFS, it would have been good, but not that
good. You guys really should have got in there with 30. That's the right flow.
Yeah, that'd be juicy. Apparently, it used to run at like 400 CFS all the time.
What?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and then whoever runs the dam cut it off for some reason.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. That's what I heard.
Need some AW Utah reps to negotiate some releases.
Yeah. Yeah, someone needs to get on that. It'd be pretty stout then. Yeah. And then I also ran the Weber.
Haven't heard of that one.
Class 2, but with sweet splat rocks.
Cool. Oh, nice.
So if you're looking to splat, it's a good spot.
Were you able to do that in your boat, or did you borrow a boat?
I borrowed a boat. Nice. One sec. I'm about to get... I'm getting kids yelling at me.
Oh, dang.
Oh, here, can you give me one sec?
Yeah.
Is that Ben McKenzie?
Yo, I'm doing a podcast.
Can we get a picture? Can we get a picture, Ben?
Yo, I'm doing a podcast. Right. One sec.
It's all... We can cut this out if you want to say hi to your friends.
Oh, no, we're good.
Okay, that was awesome. I feel like I want to keep that in.
Yeah.
You can definitely keeping that in.
You can find them on Instagram at bongflow, but you might want to cut that part out.
Nope, keeping it in.
All right, so.
Okay, into the topic.
Onto the topic.
Right.
So, Minim River, where did that first enter your mind as something you wanted to do?
All right, well, I've been looking at... One sec, I need to tell him to go away.
Hey.
Fuck off.
Wait, what? Will you sign my titties? Wait.
Dude, let me know what... River talk, dog.
Is it big?
It's huge. It's huge, and they can hear you. I gave Bongflow a shout out.
Yo. Hey, that's my boy, man. All right, church. Finish your shit. We'll go do something.
All right, sick. Go away.
That's why you declined my calls. You
wanna... That was awesome.
All right.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was good. That's, I was going to tell you that probably happened at some point, but.
I think this is great. This is what the listeners want.
Yeah, that was gold. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to biz.
Back to business. All right, James looking over his notes. Continue.
All right, cool. So the Upper Minim River, I've always been pretty stoked on the whole Willowa drainage, which is where the Minim is.
Where are the Willowas for those that have no idea what that is?
Like far northeastern Oregon near Joseph.
All right.
Yeah. So it's super cool mountain range. And I've always been super interested in running whitewater there. And Jacob brought up the Upper Minim to me. So I was scoping it out on Google Earth, and it looked really awesome. So decided to give it a go. And had a big hike in, which I was pretty stoked about also.
How big? Let's talk about the hike for a little bit. So I remember dropping you off. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. I'm looking through Jordan's questions here. Let's go over like the planning before we get there.
Okay.
What are you looking at? What do you see on the maps that makes it look good? And what do you see about the hike that looks awesome or challenging or that?
Okay. Well, I guess so. As far as the run goes, there was a lot of ledgy looking stuff. It was kind of brushy, so it's kind of hard to tell what was in there, but there was a lot of white, which looks.
And
like
this is from satellite imagery, right? That you're looking at.
Yeah, this is from satellite imagery.
So space scouting.
Space scouting, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of white in between the brush, and there was like a top 7 miles that I couldn't find anything about people running before, so that was what I was most interested in. So it looked like there was a cool 7 mile first ascent to be had. So that's what piqued my interest.
Nice.
What and then what did those reports of the section that had been run, how did that look to you before you did the run?
It looked pretty good. They actually left a lot of cool stuff out, if I remember correctly. Hmm. They may have had less water than me, but from what I gathered, or maybe I didn't just read closely enough, it wasn't as good as I thought it was.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, how did they describe it?
I mean, I'd have to look back, but it seemed very mellow to me. They didn't include the long, like, nonstop class 3+ sections in there. I think they had a ducky in there too, so maybe that affected my opinion of how hard it was.
we'll let that slide.
We'll let that one go.
Okay, and then when you're looking at the hike, what before you do the hike, what are you picturing that being like?
I was picturing the hike being, it was harder than I thought it would be, more uphill, which I knew it was going to be, but a little stouter. Also, I weighted my kayak down quite a bit more than necessary.
You had a lot of food, as I recall.
Yeah, had a lot of food, an accidental Alfredo sauce package.
which weighed like 2.5 pounds, I'm sure.
Yeah, the first night I thought I was about to eat a sweet chicken Alfredo thing and just dumped a bag of Alfredo sauce into my pot.
Did you eat it?
No, I dumped it out. Yeah, luckily I had 5 days of food, so it was all good. But that was definitely a heavy one.
Yeah,
but the hike was pretty hard actually. At the top of the pass, there was probably 2 miles of snow.
Dang.
Were you able to tell where the trail was when you got to the snow, or was it buried?
It was totally buried, but there was one group of people that was ahead of me, I guess, so I followed their footsteps up, but
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It would have been pretty easy to find the lake still, since it was a straight shot, but it definitely helped.
Good.
Following the footsteps.
Did you make it all the way to the lake on your first day of hiking?
No, I was probably like 3/4 of a mile from the lake when I decided to stop.
Was it getting dark, or were you just...
Yeah, it was getting dark, and so I decided just to find the first, like, good spot I could that wasn't super snowy. There were some dry patches. It was kind of slow going. I kept falling on the snow, and it was really hard to get my backpack back on in, like, the middle of a snowfield.
Oh.
So that took up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I've 5 got... minutes of fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. I fell a lot.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What was your technique for getting it all back up and moving on the trail once you fall?
Well, there usually wasn't a tree nearby, so I would dig a little hole for the stern to go in, or the bow of my kayak, and I would get it up on the bow after a few attempts without sliding and try to get it back on. But, yeah, that took a bunch of time, though, because it happened a lot. I mean, I feel like it took at least like 30 or 45 minutes out of the hike.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I felt a lot.
God, that would take a lot of energy to...
Yeah, I almost should have just shouldered it at that point, but...
Could you have dragged it? Could you have dragged it? Was there enough snow for that?
Yeah, there was a bunch of snow, but it was kind of uphill, and that would have been harder.
Okay.
It was like kind of lumpy snow, so...
Ugh.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been super easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for the listener's reference of how heavy Ben's boat was, all three of us at the start of dropping him off were trying to lift it up to position Ben, and it was kind of difficult for three people to do that. And so we set him on his way just to carry it all on his own for the next 30 miles.
Yeah. And after more trips this summer, my kayak has always been much heavier than everyone else's. So I'm definitely doing something wrong.
Have you figured out what it is? What's causing the weight?
I haven't. Someone commented on a full tube of toothpaste that I brought.
Were you trying to be economic in that purchase?
What?
Were you trying to make the economic choice in that scenario?
Yeah, that's what I had.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think it added that much weight, but maybe I had a lot of other stupid items like that.
Maybe you had a secret, you still have a secret Alfredo sauce packet back there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I brought a few extra GoPro batteries on one of the trips and forgot my GoPro case, so that was a waste.
Oh, my goodness.
Add some weight. Yeah.
How many other people did you see once you made it to the lake? You said there was one group of people ahead of you. Did you ever bump into them?
Yeah, so when I got to the top of the lake, I saw them, like, that morning. And they were hiking out. And those were the only people I saw for pretty much the whole trip until I got farther down the river.
Cool.
Yeah, there was no one else on the trail. It seemed like people hadn't been there in a long time. Like, still a bunch of wood down across the trail. There were some pretty old footsteps that I was following for a little bit down the trail a ways, but it seemed like it had been a while since someone else had been there. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So did that mean you were seeing more wildlife than you would normally be seeing? Was there any concern of larger animals?
Yeah, I didn't see any wildlife, but for probably 5 or 6 miles on the last part of the hike, I was following a trail of either like mountain lion poop.
Oh.
Or someone told me there was wolves there also. I don't know if it's from that, but
either of those sounds terrible.
It's big and hairy.
Oh my gosh.
For miles.
Oh.
Well, hopefully it was just you seeing him.
That was kind of spooky.
Yeah.
So that's kind of spooky. I was looking behind me a lot on the last bit of the hike.
I bet.
So.
All right. Yeah. So day two, you finally reached the water. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So my plan to run the top 7 miles. So I wanted to put him pretty high up, and I had a pretty late start that day.
What timing does that mean?
I probably started hiking, when was that? I don't know, 8 or 9. I thought I should have started much earlier, so probably 9. Anyways, after a while of hiking, through a super cool valley. Like one of the cooler places I've been after you get down to the bottom at the end of the lake. Yeah, so I saw a spot that looked flat in the creek and decided to hike in and put in. Spent a while there again, hanging out, eating food.
How far would you guess you are below the lake at this point, miles-wise?
Let's see. 2? I probably hiked 2 or 3 miles.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, so, and it took a little while to get there because there was more snow, but, so I put on where the creek looked flat, looked sweet, paddled for less than a minute, and the creek dropped off the face of the earth.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like waterfall or just like cascade?
Just slides. It's like kind of manky slides, which would have been cool, but it was full of wood and there was no eddies. So, so I walked down a little bit just to scout and it looked woody. So I just started hiking through the woods and went for a while and it was just looking the same. I probably spent like an hour hiking through the woods. And then after that, I decided to hike back up to the trail, put my backpack on and just keep hiking.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I did not, barely covered any distance when I first put on. so that was annoying because I spent a bunch of time doing that. And then I hiked for a while. I got closer to the creek. I heard a cool waterfall. or what sounded like a cool waterfall. Checked it out, and it was just a pretty stout double drop with wood. Tiny with no eddies. So that's kind of when I said screw it and just decided to hike down to where I knew the other group had put on.
Mm.
So in total, it was, I hiked probably 6 miles after I decided to take off.
Oh, man. And yeah, was this on the trail, or were you just, like, push-wise?
The trail was pretty close when I decided to go back, luckily.
Nice.
Yeah. So, like, in total, the hike was 11 or 12 miles, somewhere between there.
Whoa. Yeah. And this is at relatively high elevation for Oregon, at the going over a pass there.
And what's that elevation?
I don't know, Jacob?
I know. He's zooming in right now.
Looks like you topped out around 7,400 feet.
Yeah.
You started in the Lostine drainage and hiked over the pass to Minim Lake, which it's probably worth noting, kind of cool fact about Minim Lake is it drains into both the Lostine River and the Minim River. I thought that was
kind of cool. Neat. Yeah, and it was, this is like beginning of July, and it was still mostly frozen when I got up there. That was kind of cool.
Dang, yeah. So the lake was mostly frozen.
Yeah.
No camping up there.
Yeah.
And I guess that's relevant to another question that Jordan mentioned, was just how do you determine water levels? And so for somewhere like the Wallowas, it's when it still has snow in late June, early July. That's different than paddling in Western Oregon where you're relying off of rain.
Yeah. But then we also learned that on that same trip, snowmelt runs are kind of hard to know exactly how much water is going to be coming down, because when you guys all ran the Lostine, it seemed like it was a pretty high water level, where that wasn't something that we necessarily expected.
Yeah. Tilly, there was actually a fair amount of water in the Minim, more than I was expecting, I'd say. I don't know if I'd want to do it lower.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of rocky, kind of like a lot of boulder bashing, but I was surprised by the amount of water that was in there.
And that was the good thing for your trip?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It was flowing pretty nicely, and there were a bunch of pretty cool moves, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, sweet.
So after your second day of hiking, did you camp, or did you get to put in on the river?
Oh, yeah, I did not kayak that day.
Okay, two days of
hiking. I pretty much hiked for 2 days, because I spent a lot of time that second day messing around in the woods, eating food.
Nice.
And, so I got to the standard put-in, I guess we call it, when it was pretty dark.
Mm.
And so just camped there. So yeah, 2 days of hiking.
So what'd you eat for dinner that second night? Is this the Alfredo night, or is this a different night?
Alfredo night was the first night in the snow.
Okay.
I think this night I had a good one. It was a mountain house.
Nice.
Or something like that of the sort.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a good night.
Pretty good, I imagine.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so day three now. You wake up?
Yeah, wake up. Wake up, eat food, all that good stuff. I put on probably at like 8 or 9, and probably like a short section of flat water, and then it just started with really cool, like, windy class 3. And that didn't really stop for 10 miles.
Whoa.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no portages, like no wood or anything.
I think in total the run was, like, about 35 miles. And 2 or 3 portages.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, really cool. The river is super windy, and there were a bunch of log jams piled up on the outer parts of curves.
Mm.
And so there were a ton of log jams, just not in the water, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty sweet.
The white water was really good, like nonstop, good Boulder Garden stuff mixed in with some class 4, like more bedrocky things. Went really fast also. I mean, I could have done the entire run in one day.
Dang.
Wow. Yeah. I would recommend it to anyone really that likes hiking into runs. It's worth a repeat.
Yeah. Was it blind, or could you kind of see things coming up, and were there eddies?
You could see almost everything. I think I scouted 2 or 3 times. One of the rapids was not much that I scouted, and then there was one pretty solid 4+ gorge that I also looked at. Nice.
Oh, I was going to say, were there eddies where you needed them to be, or were they kind of, you had to kind of make it happen to stop?
Eddies were actually kind of hard to catch since it was, like, pretty windy and just rocky the whole way. It was actually kind of hard to stop sometimes. And there were a few times where I believe I just kind of went downstream through a rapid that I could boat scout, but I may have preferred to stop if I could have. So that was kind of a challenge, actually.
Okay. But, so yeah. this gorge that you checked out?
Yeah. So that was probably, I don't know, maybe like a 1/4 mile long in total. And that was a series of ledges and chutes with some potentially stout holes if you were to go in them. I was definitely feeling a little more focused on that one, for sure. actually got a little pinned trying to eddy out above the biggest one.
Oh, no.
That was a moment of sketchiness, for sure.
How did you unpin yourself?
Well, what happened, I tried to cut it a little too close catching an eddy and ended up just kind of paddling to some bouldery stuff at the lip and got stuck and kind of, like, pinned upstream a bit. And I ended up just getting out in the water, and the water just filled up my boat.
Oh.
And it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of close. I had to kind of pull it in out of the current.
Dang.
So that was a moment of slight not coolness. But it fixed itself pretty fast.
What, if you were doing that same thing next time, what would you do different?
I was trying to play it a little too close. You could definitely have gotten out higher than I did. So I would say trust your instincts of what looks safest if you're doing that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's hard in those scenarios when you've been hiking for so long and, like, putting so much physical effort. Sometimes you're tempted to just, like, push it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's always hard to make that call when you're, like, kind of exhausted and whatnot.
Yeah, totally. And also, I was feeling the need to kind of just keep going and keep my speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Not spend a long time just messing around if I didn't need to. I think that played a factor also.
Yeah,
lesson learned.
Okay. And so that brings up another thing, the topic of paddling on your own is a thing sometimes. What special, or not special, but what do you do different when you're on a trip on your own versus in a group?
I definitely scout more, more cautious in what I decide to run and not run. I think I view rapids a little differently when I'm by myself. Sometimes I think a rapid will look worse than it might be if I'm by myself, because, you know, a hazard where someone could just pull you out easy wouldn't be the case otherwise. Definitely more focused, a little more in tune and paying attention, I think.
That's good. That's a good answer. So after this gorge, you did get out and scouted it, drain your boat, and then you run that gorge. Everything goes well through there?
Yeah, that was all good. Super fun. Yeah, really fun rapid, flowy. And then after that, it was just more super cool class 3-4 until you get to the sweet fishing lodge, pretty much. It's just out there in the middle of nowhere, which is pretty cool.
A fishing lodge? Did you go into
it? It's a fly-in fishing lodge, right?
I did not go into it. I thought about it. It looked awesome.
I bet. Yeah,
you can't actually hike into it. There were some people hiking in, but it's pretty sweet looking. Awesome mansion looking thing.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. And then from there, there was probably, I just measured it. I think it was like a 20-mile paddle out from there with some more class 3. And then probably the last 10 miles was just a spread out class 2 rapid.
Pretty continuous, though.
Yeah, continuous. Like, very few paddle strokes needed if you didn't want to take a paddle stroke.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah,
and you camped
flat water.
Nice. Yeah. And you camped again in there somewhere, right?
Yeah, I decided to camp again that night just because I didn't want to do it all in one day. I thought it'd be cool to do it in two.
Yeah,
so I just camped somewhere. I think I was like 6 miles from the takeout when I camped. But
okay.
Yeah, but, you could do it all in one day.
Okay. Did you camp on an island or on shore? Did you pick out a campsite or just kind of camped when you felt like camping?
I just camped where I camped like I felt like it. I passed by some better campsites for sure because I was looking for a sweet one. And I ended up just getting kind of a bouldery, rocky one that night. Yeah, and there was actually a thunderstorm that night, which I was not prepared for.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did you have for camping?
I had a hammock and a sleeping bag.
With no cover?
Pad. And so I just put my sleeping pad on top of me. My hammock.
Nice.
And that did the trick.
Okay. Did you sleep the whole night, or was your sleep compromised by the rain?
Definitely compromised. For sure.
Yeah.
The raindrops were keeping me awake.
Oh, I bet.
But the sleeping pad trick worked pretty well. So
nice.
I'd recommend it if you're stuck in that situation.
Okay, noted.
Yeah. So big picture question. I feel like some paddlers that paddle at your ability might not see the appeal of a trip like this, but what makes you enthusiastic and excited to keep doing trips like this where there may not be super sick whitewater, but there's kind of a cool place to check out with your boat and there's a lot of unknowns?
Oh, all right. Well, I'd say almost any day I would choose a new run over a sweet class 5 run that I've done a bunch of times before. I think exploring things is what drives me to kayak in general. Mm. It's more interesting, especially when you feel like you already kind of paddle at like kind of the top of your ability and you're not necessarily getting better by kayaking harder stuff. It's more just more risk instead. There's a lot to get out of just seeing new places, and finding your way down a new run is a challenge and skill in its own. I feel like there's a lot of like really good paddlers, like class 5 paddlers, that aren't necessarily super good at getting their way down an exploratory run that isn't super hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really good skill to have, just like safety wise and also just for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's really cool finding just a cool rapid. I feel like running one shitty creek is worth it if there's a cool rapid on it that you get to run for the first time. I think that's worth a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's cool to be in places that you know not a lot of places or not a lot of people have been. And I find a few of my favorite memories on trips that, like, we've done together is not even being in my boat. It's just, like, portaging my way down this really cool creek and being like, dang, like, that would be such a sick rapid if there wasn't wood in it. And, like, oh, man, we got to keep portaging. Or just, like, having the hope that downstream there's going to be a sick rapid. And I feel like there's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of joy that you get from that, even if it's like, oh man, I wouldn't do that creek ever again. But you're just like, the whole time you're just like, man, there's going to be such a sick rapid, and like, this is such a cool place to be with my friends, and it's just awesome.
Or like, guys, yeah, check totally. Out the size of this Devil's Club.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Look at the size of this Devil's Club. I think Ben can attest to the, well, maybe you've seen larger, but when we were scouting the creek in the North Cascades, I just remember like, that was the biggest Devil Club I've ever seen, and that was one of the highlights of that hike.
Yeah, totally. I just finished getting Devil's Club out of my hand from like that from then, like a week ago.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little something to remember your trip by.
Yep, little keepsakes.
Yeah.
It looks like Jacob has a question.
Sure. This is another question from Jordan. He asked a number of questions about how do you handle certain things on an exploratory trip? Looks like one of them is throw and goes. So if you get to a rapid and it looks like a throw and go might be the thing to do, but you don't know if anyone's ever done that or run that river before, and so certainly not, you don't know if someone's done that throw and go. What do you do? How do you assess whether that's a safe thing to do, or whether, how do you weigh that against the other options?
Well, if you're asking me, I'm always pretty scared to be the first one to throw and go.
Oh, right.
But I think the answer is Jacob usually goes first.
Second that.
But logically, I can tell that the pool is deep enough, I think. Especially if it's
something you could say that you look for. I know that's hard to.
You would if you're scouting on anything that's shallow. The boils are not going to be coming up downstream very far, you know. Otherwise, I guess if it's a green pool, you can kind of just look at the side of the canyon, see how sheer they are. How just dark the water is. But again, I'm usually not the first one to go, so I'm not sure I feel comfortable telling people when and what not to do in that situation.
Yeah. So maybe a better question for you would be, you used to really have a resistance to jumping off cliffs into water, but you seem like you got over that fear. Or maybe not got over it, but have now you're able to jump off cliffs, whereas it used to take a long time. I remember one moment or one day we were all at Blue Pool on the Mackenzie River, your namesake river, and I remember you having quite an experience up there getting yourself to jump in. So maybe describe that experience and then how that's translated into being able to jump off of stuff now.
All right. Well, I guess the way to describe the way I used to feel, I would definitely freeze when I would have to jump, and I physically could not make myself do it. So I guess I've learned, I think that's the most fear I've felt, is just having to jump off cliffs. I don't know. I think the key was learning to kind of set aside the fear of that, which could go hand in hand with kayaking, put the fear out of your mind. But honestly, I still feel the fear, and I've taught myself to push through it. And jumping off cliffs is still scary for me.
Was there any trick, or you just kind of trick yourself, your mind? How did you get to the point where you can go from needing to be up there for 10 minutes to being able to jump at will?
I tried to shut off my mind and not hesitate. Hesitating was what was ruining me.
Okay.
The longer, just shut off your mind and go.
Okay.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I've always found it interesting that there are some really good kayakers like yourself who have paddled off 80-foot waterfalls, but can't jump off a 30-foot cliff, or can, but like really struggle with jumping off a 30-foot cliff. What's the difference in your mind of paddling off a really large waterfall versus jumping off a cliff half its size?
I think the difference is the level of commitment you have when you're running a waterfall. Like, I think, especially when a waterfall has a lead-in, I'm the least nervous. Because at that point, you're just focusing on running the lead-in. Mm-hmm. And you're just in the mindset of running a whitewater. But, I mean, I'm at Lago, which just has a calm pool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the waterfall, I had the similar feeling of just standing at the edge of a cliff. But it's one of the things where you kind of, once you peel out into the current, you're pretty committed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you decide to freeze, then that's not a great option. So I think like the pushing through that part comes when you paddle out of the, whereas jumping off a cliff is kind of the only step where you jump off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I totally
understand that's why.
Yeah. I feel like there's,
like, I prefer running. Yeah, like if a waterfall has a lead-in, I prefer that. I'd say.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's interesting you say that, because I remember, and both of you can correct me if I'm wrong, on Gladiator Creek, there's the waterfall, and I think you were the only person to run the lead-in to that drop, and then also run the waterfall after that.
The first time we were there.
Yeah.
And then you also went first the second time with the other group, as I recall. Is that, or did Adam?
No, I think Adam or Chris did.
Okay.
Because I know I landed on my face and Chris was taking photos below.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I remember that. I remember you being like, dude, I feel weird. I don't know what's going on, but I feel super off. And I was like, I don't know. It seemed like you hit the water pretty hard on that drop. He's like, yeah.
Okay.
On that first trip.
Yeah. You ran the lead in, and
the lead in seemed super, to me, and I'm not as good as a paddler as either of you, but to me, it's so hard to even think about running a rapid above something that I'm nervous about, because I feel like I want to dedicate all my energy to what is making me concerned. But it's interesting to hear you say that running a lead in is helpful in going off of a larger drop, because it just puts you in kind of the focus mode.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel like that waterfall in Boulder Creek, kind of stout.
Yeah, definitely.
Into the 40, 50 footer. I'm like less nervous doing that than paddling off, I don't know, like Celestial, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow. With much higher consequences on Boulder Creek.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's just good to get focused. So, yeah.
Yeah. But that definitely makes sense. I think I'll be thinking about that if I ever run something that gets me in that zone again.
Okay, so another question here has to do with eddies and stopping. And I've heard this question before, or at least this viewpoint from people who haven't done much exploratory kayaking before. And maybe you're on like a sort of continuous river and you've got a way kind of pushing downstream versus scouting every single corner. How do you, when you're looking at a corner that you can't really see the next eddy, how are you assessing that and deciding whether to push downstream or not?
Good question. I mean, if I really cannot see downstream, then I wouldn't go. But like for the times where you can see the drop in front of you, but not necessarily what's below it, but you can see the eddy downstream somewhere. That's the situation where I would try to keep pushing, I guess. I don't know. I mean, you kind of get a feel after a while for what a drop is doing without scouting it. You get pretty good at judging what's happening. But are you talking about, like, how do you, like, read the whitewater?
I'm not 100% sure. Because it is a good question, and I didn't have a perfect answer either.
Yeah, that's a good question, because, I mean, I do feel like I've definitely taken risks I maybe shouldn't have by doing that same thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I know on our trips you're often someone that's going ahead and like signaling the rest of the group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I do that when I'm not very sure that I'll be able to catch an eddy. So, and I feel like I'm pretty good at judging what a drop is doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I can see the bottom of it anyways, or that I'll be at least be able to make it into an eddy or a stop on rocks. Yeah, that's kind of a good question.
You might have alluded to something. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. You might have alluded to something there. He said, or just stop on rocks. I think maybe something that people who don't do those sort of trips very often, maybe what they think is an eddy, and maybe what you might consider an eddy or a place to stop might be different. Whereas maybe you think running up on a rocks, or like, I know we've certainly just grabbed tree branches against a shore, and that doesn't seem weird on exploratory trips.
Yeah, totally. Especially, I mean, if we're doing an exploratory trip, there's a good chance it's super low or it's not much water. And yeah, I mean, I have paddled onto rocks or like kind of half pinned myself many times just to stop. And like, that was the plan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to be pretty safe about it. I mean, I don't do something where I'm not very confident I can't do it. But yeah, I would say, yeah, just get creative, but don't be overly optimistic.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I've certainly learned from paddling with you both is, I have gotten more familiar by observation and by doing in relatively tame scenarios to like grabbing on the branches or getting myself on a rock or just basically being able to stop myself from going further downstream when I want to. And then also practicing a lot, catching eddies so that when it comes to a scenario where we're doing an exploratory trip or whatnot, I'm much more comfortable with eddy hopping and reading the water in the ways that you're saying. So I think that's good advice for folks that are wondering about exploratory kayaking, meaning that there's no beta about the run or little beta about the run, is like learning and practicing in pretty safe scenarios or tame scenarios like class 2 whitewater, class 3 whitewater, how to stop your boat just using rocks or like tree branches.
Yeah, totally. And also I think just being able to tell where an eddy will be, even if you can't necessarily see it. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot also on exploratory runs. Like, you see a corner or a big rock and you can't like see what's there, but just from like past experiences kayaking, you know that there's going to be an eddy there that you can catch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's like a lot of experience comes into play, like just drawing on all the other runs you've done to know that there's going to be a eddy there or a way to stop, you know?
Yeah, and I've probably seen you make that decision correctly 100 times or maybe more, probably more. Are there any times you can think where maybe you went one eddy too far and learned a lesson from that?
Oh, give me a sec to think. I'm sure that's happened. All right, can you cut out the pause while I think? Is that doable?
Sure. Yeah, right. we're hitting pause right now.
Okay, cool. Have you seen that happen to me? I feel like that's happened. I know that's happened.
Well, the one that's coming to mind for me is when we all ran Ladies Canyon and we're like, oh, dang, that was Ladies Canyon.
That was slightly different in that.
Wait, which is Ladies Canyon?
It was on that trip we did.
Is that the Yuba?
One of the forks of the Yuba.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't so much you missing an eddy as catching the eddy and then just deciding to run the rapid based on what you saw.
Yeah. And because we'd been doing that the whole trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a time I've, like,
just missed an eddy and
blind. Yeah.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. No. I feel like we've probably all done it.
I know it's happened.
But I can't. I just can't think of one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go through all the runs. Dang.
I remember you. So this isn't exactly what I asked. I remember we were running Elkhorn Creek, which goes into the Little North Saniam. And I remember you catching an eddy. And maybe you said it was for fun or something.
Oh, yeah.
Just downstream, river went underground.
What?
Yeah, or I do remember. It was like, channel. I caught the eddy on purpose just to see what was there, but it was like a shallow, gravelly eddy, and the river just, like, went underground.
I've never heard that story before. That's terrible. Yeah.
And I guess that's a better example of you caught that eddy to catch it, because that's just sort of what you do on exploratory trips. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily just bomb into every rapid if you've got an inkling that maybe I'll just catch this rapid really quick or this eddy really quick and take a peek. You just do that.
And I feel like
it's more example of you doing that.
And I feel like when you're doing runs, like the runs that we try to do more often, is even on the classic runs, some of the joy we get out of it is practicing catching weird eddies.
So
we'll do a run that we've done a ton of times and know all about, and we'll be like, oh, look at that, that might be a sweet eddy to catch, and we're just always practicing that kind of stuff because we're trying to apply that to the next trip where you might have to catch a super weird eddy, like
fun.
On North Fork Silver, like one eddy before it drops off into a waterfall and that sort of thing.
Oh, which that brings up another question, because I recall on that exact eddy you're talking about, I remember a couple of people not quite getting that eddy and having to jump out into the eddy and like,
he's talking about me.
Yeah. I'm talking about the other person, like a couple of people.
He's trying to be nice. It's okay. It was me.
Just jumping out there and pulling you into the eddy so that you didn't go backwards over the waterfall that we all ended up portaging.
Yeah.
So that is one of Jordan's questions, grabbing others. And I can't think of anyone I've met who has grabbed more people out of a river than you, Ben. So,
than me?
Yeah. mate, it sounds like this is a new revelation for you, but you tend to be in the right place at the right time to help people. What are some of the things you think about when you're like running one of these rivers? How do you position yourself? What are you thinking in terms of other people and when they might need help?
Okay. I think I'm always on the lookout for something to happen in the first place. And it's always on my mind of positioning myself in case something went wrong. That's just something that I've just kind of developed a habit of, I think.
Yeah.
And just always looking for like outs on the water if you needed to stop.
Mm.
You know, I think like whenever I see someone get pinned or start to, I kind of look where to get out.
Yeah, that's super smart.
I think that's just a habit.
I think about that, but it's like if someone's getting pinned, you might not get their boat out. So that's super smart to be like, are there any exits?
I mean, I think I've just developed the habit of looking for, like, emergency exits, I guess I'd call them. I mean, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you can't help someone, because that would suck.
Absolutely.
All right, let me ask you guys. There have been There was a time on the Payette recently where this dude got pinned in front of me and I hopped out.
Oh,
but
nice.
I didn't spend time getting my throw rope because he was right there.
And I feel like that's a scenario. So we re-recorded another podcast earlier today, and we were talking about this exact thing. It's important to know when to just act and when to, like, gather all the tools, I guess. So, like, if you're able to get to the person and it's a scenario like a pin where if you don't get to them quickly, it can be super bad. I feel like the right decision is to get to them and, like, do something about it.
Yeah, so I think more than once I've not grabbed my throw rope to get someone out. And then after the fact, I was wondering if that would have made things easier. Or if I should have done that. So, I don't know. I was wondering what you guys thought about that. But
I feel like, yeah, it's hard because I've been in a scenario where, so, like, I'm thinking, like, how would you improve that scenario? Like, I think all of us carry our throw bag, like, in our kayak. We don't have a PFD throw bag. And I've certainly seen the downfalls of having a PFD throw bag. So, and then also, I know it's harder to roll and, like, do other things if you have another thing on your torso when you're paddling.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like, I think it's a great habit to try to always, like, bring your throw bag with you whenever you're exiting your boat. But, like, if you see someone pinned in a way that you know that you can get to them and make contact and, like, help them, I don't know that spending the extra time to get your throw bag out of your boat would be the best decision, just considering how quickly a pin can turn badly.
Yeah,
but
yeah, for sure.
I also think, like, carrying your throw bag in a way that it's easy to access is always good. Like, if you can just pull it out, and I think Jacob's going to talk about this a little bit, if you can just pull it out without rustling through the back of your boat, which I've started thinking about recently, all the better.
Yeah, I definitely always keep mine between my legs. That's for sure.
Yeah, I used to keep mine in the back of the boat, and I switched in the last few years, and now I always keep it in the between my legs.
Yeah, I always make sure mine is, like, clipped in between my legs and not moving around.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely seen people have to get to a throw rope before in the back of their boat, and it can take them, like, 30 seconds if it's caught on something.
Yeah, or more. It's just, like, and it's so stressful.
Yeah.
When I was learning to kayak, somebody told me a throw rope is to a kayaker as a sword was to a knight. And that's definitely, like, making it too grandiose. But at the same time, I think the message is clear. Like, that is your one and only tool when it comes to helping other people.
Oh, and one thing that I see all the time that really bothers me is when people scout rapids. Like, not bringing a throw rope with them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, either someone is going to decide the rapid or to run the rapid and want safety, and you're not going to have a bag. Or someone runs it from, like, another group.
Yep.
And you can't help them if they need it. Or someone just slips in.
Oh, yeah, and totally.
Which totally happens.
Yeah.
It has happened.
That same guy who told me about the sword and the knight said the same thing. Like, you never know who's going to be coming down from upstream.
Yeah.
You have no control over that. So just bring your throw rope every time. And there is an exception to that rule in certain circumstances, but it should be the exception. You should plan on having your throw rope with you all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so easy if you're, like, right next to the rapid.
Yeah, I
think that's something that should be better taught and, like, passed down to newer paddlers, because it seems like it's not. And even with paddlers our age, it seems like sometimes that doesn't happen. Like, like on the Chilean is the perfect example of, like, highly capable paddlers and lots of them in a canyon. And I just remember being like one of the few people that had a throw rope immediately at, you know, basically every rapid because I was portaging almost all of them. But it's like, why is there only a couple people with a throw bag? Like, shouldn't everyone have a throw bag? Especially if there's like, you know, 15 people on the side of the river watching people run this for half an hour.
Yeah, it's like you're totally useless.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yes. It's very annoying.
Yeah. I've definitely tried to, like, there have been times I've gotten out of my boat, taken 10 steps, and then realized I didn't grab my throw rope. And there have been a couple of times where I didn't go back for it. And I'm like, oh, I won't need it this time. And I can't stop thinking about it. It's like the only thing I'm thinking about is you're so stupid. Yeah. Why didn't you just go back when you were 10 steps from your boat to get your throw rope? Now you're 50 steps from the boat and you're useless.
Yeah.
I mean, like obviously I've forgotten to do it before. But yeah, same thing. Like, you're just like hoping nothing happens because that'd be so terrible.
Oh, yeah.
If like something did and it was just because you decided not to grab it kind of thing.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
You're rolling the dice with somebody else's well-being every time you don't have a throw bag.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we're at over the hour mark, which means we've succeeded. And it's time to conclude with either we decided earlier today that Gear of the Week doesn't have to be gear. It could be a recommended reading or podcast or audiobook, or it's just the thing of the week. So,
okay.
Ben, do you have a thing of the week?
A thing of the week. Okay. Okay. Can we pause for a sec while I think?
Yep. Pause.
Okay. A thing of the week. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Any item.
Anything that you think people that listen to this podcast would be interested in.
Yeah. First tier is like something kayak related, obviously, something you might bring in your boat that not everybody would think of. But beyond that, it could be pretty much anything.
Okay. Anything is something good.
Priscilla can go first while you're thinking.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right. Shoot. So my spending a lot of time driving and whatnot, podcasts become more interesting than just listening to music. And one of my favorite podcasts to listen to has been My Favorite Murder, which is these two ladies having pretty humorous dialogue, but then also talking about crimes, murders, missing persons, hauntings, and it's all very serious topics, but they do it in a humorous way, and I feel like I learn a lot when I'm listening to them. And they are usually like drinking when they're recording the podcast, so it's a little bit loose and funny, and I feel like it just makes the drives a little more interesting.
Sweet. I've totally seen that on the list, but I haven't clicked on it.
Oh, dang.
So I'll check it out.
It's pretty good.
All
right. Are you sad, or do you need some more time?
Can I do a rant?
Yes. Yeah. Do it.
Okay. I'm going to rant. Okay. Something I think is so silly is when someone posts a video of themselves doing something cool on Instagram, and then some pro sees it and shares it on their Instagram. They'll take a screenshot and reshare the pro sharing their photo.
Oh, dude. What?
And then like 10 pros will do it, and it'll be like 10 stories in a row of pros sharing their photo.
I'm clearly not cool enough because I've never seen that, but that sounds terrible. Often.
Well, here's what you got to do now. Since I've never seen this before, you've got to take a screenshot of the screenshot that the pro took to send to me so that I can understand what's happening.
Yes. Okay, that's good.
It's like story inception.
I just can't think of any rationale behind it other than look at this pro that thinks I'm sick right now.
You are exactly right.
It gets me every time I see it.
Stop doing this, people.
Yeah.
Good one. That was a good one. That was a great one.
My thing of the week, something my dad told me that I think probably relates to a lot of kayakers, is we spend a lot of time in the car driving. And as you get older, your body starts falling apart. And so he told me that if you drive, like a lot of people drive with their knees higher than their hips, and a car kind of sets you up to do that. And he said, if you can set your seat up so that your hips are higher than your knees, that's ideal. Given that I'm fairly tall, if I set anything under my butt, my head will hit the ceiling. So what I do is I just scoot the seat all the way back so that my knees are even with my hips. And I have found that that makes driving a whole lot more comfortable. So maybe if you're driving hours and hours to go kayaking, you might maybe give that a try and see if it helps.
Yeah, no way. Good tip.
Yeah. Good one. Try.
Nice.
All right. Well, sweet guys. This was a pretty fun interview to do. Hopefully you didn't say anything too offensive, but if
we
did,
the duck ears.
If we did, that's why we podcast.
I apologize for the duck ears.
Ben has IK'd before.
I've IK'd and found it fun.
Yeah.
Oh.
We got video view doing the Ohanapkosh and BZ Falls.
Oh yeah, you crushed it.
And BZ Falls.
Oh yeah,
I don't remember running BZ in an IK.
Oh, you ran it in Jacob's stiletto, and you crushed it. And it's in his tutorial video about why the stiletto is the superior IK.
Really, I should watch this video so I can remember running it.
Jacob will send it to you.
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah, I want to see me doing this. Sweet.
Sick.
Well, do you want to wrap it up, Ben?
Well, first off. How do people find you on Instagram?
That's
and
true.
If they want to buy your stickers?
Oh, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your business.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wrap it up that way.
Okay. Sweet. I am I'll call it a freelance illustrator. And I make a lot of art and I design a lot of stickers that are outdoorsy and such for different sports.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on my Instagram at benmckenzie.art. So.
Nice.
Go check that out if you feel like it.
And Redbubble, right? Are you still on Redbubble?
Oh, I have not put anything up there in a long time.
Oh, okay. There are some cool designs up there, and you can order various things that way. And if you're a business and you need a logo, reach out to Ben.
You've done some of that? Yeah.
My Etsy is Ben McKenzie Art.
Nice.
So that's where most of my business is done.
All right. Well, you want to... send it out? Send us out?
Oh, yeah. Ben, you want to make a conclusion?
A conclusion. All right. Well, let's see. I think my conclusion to any kayaker listening would be to explore more creeks, because I think that is something not enough kayakers do. And it is, I think, the best part of kayaking to see new things on the river.
Awesome.
Heck yes.
Fully agree. Yeah.
Well, it was great to talk with you a little bit, Ben. Thanks for sharing your stories and your perspective. We'll certainly ask you on again to talk about some more of your adventures. So, listeners, stay tuned.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet.